Dear Sugar is supported by
The universe has good news for the lost, lonely, and heartsick. Sugar is here, the both of us, speaking straight into your ears. I'm Cheryl Strayed.
I'm Steve Almond. This is Dear Sugar Radio.
Oh, dear soul, won't you please share some bittersweet days with me? I check my bell bags every day in the sugar
Dear Sugar, I am writing to you because I've been addicted to pain medication for about 10 years now. I'm what you'd call a high-functioning addict. No one, not one person, knows that I abuse this drug, partially because I've never told anyone, and partially because I do not act like I am taking drugs at all. I found a doctor who is overworked and absent-minded and who overprescribes this medication for me. I now have an 18-month-old daughter who is absolutely amazing and perfect. I managed to stop taking this medication while pregnant with her. I have a wonderful, loving, sexy, devoted husband. We have a very nice life. Except I have this secret addiction, and I don't know what to do about it. I fear that my husband would never understand. He doesn't have an addictive bone in his body and has expressed great disapproval about people with addictions. I think that he would be completely disgusted by my addiction and wouldn't be able to get over the fact that I have been keeping this from him for so long. I fear that he would leave me. The problem is that this drug makes me feel like a better wife and parent. It does not make me feel foggy or out of it. It gives me the energy and happiness I think I need to be the good mother I want to be. And I am quite sure that I am a good mother to my little one. I have gone for a week or two here and there without this drug, and I literally cannot get off the couch. I'm terrified that I don't know how to live a life happily without this drug. I have struggled with anxiety since I was a little girl, and this drug alleviates all of my anxiety. It does a much better job of alleviating my anxiety than any of the antidepressant, anti-anxiety meds that I have taken in the past or currently take. Is there a way for me to stop taking this drug quietly, or do I need to tell my husband? And how can I still lead a fulfilling, happy life without this drug? Yours, addicted and afraid.
So often, you know, when people write to us, what's right there in their letters, what they already know to be true. It's so present to me in this letter from this woman. She is sitting there in her house writing this letter to us, narrating her version of events, her version of the truth. And part of it is justification and denial. And part of it is raw honesty, raw vulnerability.
Right.
And she's saying on one hand, help. And she's saying on the other hand, actually things are great as they are. And so there are all these reasons that it shouldn't change.
Right.
But the very fact that in one hand she's got that word help,
right,
tells us that this is the first step in her transformation.
Yeah.
She was brave enough to write to us. She was brave enough to tell us her truth. I think the next step is to be brave enough to tell her doctor. Now, that is brave because even though she has confidentiality with her doctor is the person who gets her these drugs.
Right.
You know, and she's going to go to him or her and say, I have a problem.
Well, she needs to go to a different doctor. The doctor she's going to is absent-minded and overworked, and he is not the person who's really paying attention to her health. He's the drug dealer.
That's right.
Okay, so she needs to find a doctor who has the psychopharmacological qualifications to gauge exactly what the effect is and why this is having such a desirable effect on her anxiety and so forth, and also is holistically looking at the whole of her life. I think there's a deeper question here that she's asking that I'm having a harder time answering without some doubt, which is, would you rather live in the truth of suffering or what you perceive as the deceit of a greater happiness? I struggle with this when I think, for instance, about taking Adderall, you know, because it helps you concentrate. If there was a drug you could take, since that's what I really want, that's where I think great writing and art comes from, is the ability to focus the mind in the midst of distraction. Well, here's this. I've never taken it, but I've always been tempted. And what if I took it, Cheryl, and I was like, wow, this allows me to be in that space, that have that intense focus that's required of me to do good work. Mm-hmm. Would I then, if I became overly dependent on it, say, actually, I need to be in the truth of my own suffering here. I need to be, I can't take that. I'm forbidding myself that pleasure. I'm forbidding myself the ability to live up to my potential with a little bit of chemical help. She says, my perception is that when I take this drug, I am the person I want to be. Cheryl, if there was a drug that you could take that would allow you to feel like the person you want to be, I don't know. I'd have a tough time not taking that.
And yet we need to try to do that. I mean, here's the deal. We all have to strive to be the people we want to be. We all have pieces of ourselves that are missing that we have to do the hard work of filling ourselves. And so some people do it with drugs, and some people do it with alcohol, and some people do it with exercise and meditation and religious faith and writing and all of the things that we do that both nurture us and harm us. You know, one thing that we can never forget in reading this letter is that it was composed by somebody who is in her addiction.
Right.
Okay? So anyone who knows anything about drug addiction will tell you that people, when they're in their addiction, they're not in their right mind. That, you know, her perceptions, to some degree, they're not true. Like, some things she can perceive about herself are accurate, and other things are, you know, influenced by, you know, the justification she's built around continuing to take this drug. You know, right. She's telling us that she's her best self. She even uses the word, I perceive that I'm at my best self when
right.
I'm on. But, you know, maybe her child 10 years down the road won't agree with that. Maybe her husband doesn't agree with that.
But what's so complicated is, you know, she talks about not being able to get off the couch, uh-huh. okay, when she's not taking this drug. Well, for an 18-month-old where the bonding is so immediate and so physical and it's so demanding, they're there all the time, which is the worst sin? If this drug allows her, or some substitute that she can mm-hmm. find that is not a painkiller but that is calibrated carefully to help elevate her mood, isn't it better to have a happy mom, or is it better to have a depressed mom who's honestly dealt with her addiction and thrown out the pills but is lying on the couch unable to really interact? I mean, I think that's deeply damaging to a kid. I see your point. Her perception might be off, is inevitably off, mm-hmm. and it's affected by this drug, but it's pretty stark. She's saying, without this drug, I'm lying on a couch and I can't get up.
Addicts are masters at giving you all the good reasons that they should continue using that drug. This is actually addict talk.
You're
okay?
Right.
This is self-justification. We know that she should be honest with her doctor so her doctor can help her find a solution, not so her doctor can take the drug away and leave her a depressed person on the
that's
couch.
Right.
We do not want that.
Right.
But she's saying, well, but that's what will happen. Well, we do not know that. That's not going to be the outcome.
Right.
Okay? The husband, he may or may not condemn her for this addiction, but it is, you know, I guess my feeling is she's in some ways using this as an excuse to continue this behavior.
Right.
And, you know, maybe he does. I mean, obviously, I believe her that he's judgmental about addicts, but maybe it's because he's never lived with one. He's never known one. He thinks of, like many people think of drug addicts, as the other.
Right.
They're not us. They're these terrible people who do terrible things. And then suddenly it's like it's your son mm-hmm. or it's your mother
that's
or it's
right.
your wife, right? Yeah. And then there's a face on that word addict. And he's living with an addict and he doesn't even know it. And
right.
I'm just going to trust that they might go through some hard times, as they probably should. I mean, I think any time that you need to expand the honest territory in a relationship,
that's
going to be difficult.
Yep.
But they absolutely have to do it. And you know, the thing is, too, I want to say is she thinks that nobody knows it. But, you know, I'm sure she's a different person on these pain medications than you know,
right.
if she weren't an addict. And kids know everything. You know, you're a father. I'm a mother. I can't really sneak anything by my kids. They know. And, you know, there will be a reckoning. If this woman doesn't deal with this, that child will grow up with a mother who is an active drug addict. And there will be a reckoning. And I think that, you know, that's a much higher price to pay than the price that this woman would have to pay right now if she dealt with it.
Right.
The advice I would give her, like in a really practical sense, I would say go to your doctor, be honest, come up with a plan, and then talk to your husband.
Right. That's the catch there, is that she's been hiding it for a long time. And I think you're right. As I hear you talk through it, she needs to come clean with him, but she needs to do the fundamental work of facing that she's been dishonest with herself, mm-hmm. and starting to show real steps in terms of getting it taken care of, going to a doctor. So she doesn't just say to him, here's the situation and I've done nothing about it, no self-reflection, no productive action to try to figure out how to get a drug that is appropriate to help me. Because she's got, it sounds like, long-standing anxiety and mood and psychological problems that require her to probably have some psychopharmacological help and maybe even some therapeutic help if it's possible.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of what she's carrying around is that she's not being truthful. That
right.
is heavy. John Prine, the songwriter John Prine,
uh-huh.
he says, your heart gets bored with your mind and it changes you.
Right.
You know, so she's sick of lying. You're right that there's a certain canniness to this letter, but you're also right that she is saying the time has come.
Mm-hmm.
I've got to do something. I've got to confess to this situation. It's not tenable for me to keep this secret any longer.
Yeah. One of the most interesting things to me in my own life and the times that I have had realizations that I have to do something about, that I have to change. That wonderful Rilke poem that says, you know, you must change your life. It culminates in that line, you must change your life. And I think we all have that over and over again. But the way that change has been presented to us so often in the kind of Hollywood industrial complex or these high epiphanies, like, you know, you're one thing, and then you have this realization and you're another. And I think that that's not realistic. What I've always been interested in as a writer and an advice giver is how actual transformation looks.
Right.
Like, how is it that we actually change our lives?
Yeah. I think what you said when you talked about Hollywood and the myth that they're sort of selling of transformation, I kept thinking of Beauty and the Beast. And the idea is that in one moment you're the Beast and then the next moment you're beautiful. And I think actually transformation is, you have to actually be both of those things for quite a while. And maybe you never get rid of the beastly urges. Maybe you never get rid of the desire to take the pill, to have something that can at least appears to cure the problems that are quite obviously afflicting her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people have trouble with that. They want it to be binary. You're either an ugly duckling or a swan.
Right.
The truth of the matter is we're beasts and we're beautiful at
yeah.
the same time.